everyone. Welcome to Terror Talk with Shannon and Kathy.
Yo.
Hello. Today on the show, we're going to talk about Stolen Youth, Inside the Cult of Sarah Lawrence, which is currently streaming on Hulu. It's a three-part original docuseries about a incredibly small cult that was run by one man and in an apartment where he kept several, I guess, of his daughter's college friends and created a cult. I mean, that's about it, right? A group of the official description is a group of Sarah Lawrence college students fall under the influence of a friend's father, Larry Ray, Lawrence Ray. The series follows the cult from its origins through its still unfolding aftermath. The first thing I would simply say by way of introduction is that it's a good documentary series. It is a very sad and I would say heavy, and what we would call in our colloquial way in our culture, a depressing story. It's really sort of sad. And I think one of the reasons that makes it so sometimes very difficult to watch is because it very much concentrates not so much on Larry, but on his victims.
That's right.
And the story is almost all about his victims, and they are interviewed, and the trajectory that they go on and the mental illness that they end up suffering at the hands of the manipulative tactics of this guy. Would you kind of say that's your thought?
I would. Yeah. I think it's a really, really, for me, it was a very difficult documentary to get through, not because it was boring, but because it was heavy. And, you know, I used this word before we started recording, which was just Larry's ability to deprogram. I mean, it goes so much further. Like, you know, we've colloquialized and really kind of overused the word gaslighting. And I think that would be highly minimizing what this was. I mean, this was a complete breakdown of someone's identity and sense of reality in a way of like rebuilding an entirely new reality where they are split off from the real world and they're not within, you know, when we do assessments of people, one of the things we look for is someone within the right mind. Are they aware of, you know, who they are, where they are, right? Orientation, we call it. What the purpose of this is such a break from reality. However, they are conscious. The narratives that are developed over time or redeveloped over time, it was incredibly frightening to watch how vulnerable and suggestive our psyches are. At the very beginning, they discuss how hated he was. And then there's a thin line between love and hate, because that then eventually turned into obsession.
They're both such passionate feelings.
Yeah. I think for me, watching that as an outsider I didn't watch how it ended. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how it was going to end.
Me neither.
So I just went along with it. It was gut-wrenching.
It was. It was like, wow, this is some depressing shit right here. I think what really got me actually near the end, honestly, again, this is three parts. So in the first part, you're kind of just figuring what the hell's going on. You're really trying to understand the manipulation that was going on. They feel controlled. They hate him. They're living in this apartment. But for these reasons, some of the tactics he's using, they begin to be, it's like the phase where you're being broken down.
That's right.
So he's breaking them down through manipulation, through convincing one of the women that she hears and sees things, and convincing them, you know, of having mental illness when they don't. All of that crazy making that comes from that sort of manipulation. And we see this in all the cult leaders that we've talked about or watched documentaries on, is there's this breaking down phase. So you're going through that in the beginning. So that's where you do get some footage of Larry, especially they have a lot of audio footage, I guess, that the victims came out of it with, where they did a lot of like videotaping and audio recording of
each other. They really did, which was bizarre.
Which is really bizarre as well, like documenting all of this, and he was documenting all of it, I assume. And that's a whole other psychological aspect of it, right? Is that they had introduced watching themselves. He's watching them. He's recording them. He's Like, what was he possibly going to do with all that footage? Did he watch it himself all the time? Like, I don't, was he using it to further manipulate them? Like, he would watch them, watch the footage. And like, I don't know what the purpose of that was, but there was a lot of it. And so that makes for a pretty gripping documentary. And that's what was kind of happening near the beginning, is that you were watching this really unfold.
You almost wonder if there was a subconscious part of them that knew that recording was, I don't know, or did they want to go back? Because here's the other thing too, when you watch him and you listen to him, like, I wonder if he used those videos against them. I wonder if it was something that he probably required them to do. I mean, who knows,
it was
right?
A control. Like, it was more like when you're living in a house, when you're being manipulated and you're trapped there and there's security cameras.
So one of the things that they talk about in the first episode is how he created a space. I almost think of like laboratory rats. He created a space of like excessive exercise and then like all the Adderall they could want.
So he probably recorded them to make sure they were doing all the things he wanted them to do when he wasn't there.
Yeah. And then obviously the things that he created for them was a perfect storm. Like, eventually with all the Adderall, the exercise, all this crazy shit, they weren't allowed to eat unless he gave them permission.
The fridge was locked.
My God. I mean, the combination of these factors, he was like simulating, I don't even know what you would call it, but it was.
Well, it's a version of a conversion camp.
Yeah.
It's the same idea.
And I mean, watching them like kill each other off. It was so bizarre.
Yeah. And they didn't kill each other off, by the way.
No, they didn't.
That wasn't part of the story.
But it caused a lot of chaos.
I could see them doing that at his hands if that's what he had wanted them to do. But then, and then it kind of takes a turn in episode 2 and 3, you sort of realize that there was a sexual component as well. They don't really highlight that right at the beginning. But then later.
That's right.
It talks about how he was also having sex with them, and they don't go into a ton of details about it, actually. Which I thought was interesting, and maybe that's because it's largely from the victim's perspective and maybe they didn't want to go into that or talk about it. But mm-hmm. Then they start calling him a manipulator through sex and money and food. And I was like, sex? Wait, what? They didn't even mention that before. So then it becomes about that. And it's a young woman and her brother and then another young woman.
So it's Felicia was the one that is having this affair with him, I think, right?
And so they're the ones that you primarily get interviews with and stuff. But there is video of other mm-hmm. kids there, too. Mm-hmm. And apparently, these were all his daughter's friends at college.
Which is so weird.
I know. They didn't really go into that.
And he was like hanging out on their doorstep. They didn't. I was wanting them to talk more about how this guy ended up moving himself in. Because all they say is his daughter was a student at the university. And
then all of a sudden he's there and there's all these people and now they're what?
Living with like 5 20-year-olds.
Yeah, they didn't really go too much into that. But they did talk in the very beginning about how he seduced them in the beginning. And I don't mean sexually, I just mean personality wise, is that he was the fun guy. He was the fun dad. He was always cooking for them and he was playing games with them and music and they would have this great time. He was like the good time guy. And then that's how it started. So there was, of course, as you guys probably know, there's the beginning.
Yeah.
Where they're fun and you like them because that's what they have to use. Is you like them and then they manipulate them.
Well, right. And so that's how I saw like episode 1 was really that idealization phase and, you know, they're.
And then breaking them down.
And breaking them down. And so then they get to episode 2 and this is where all those weird forced confessions start.
Yeah.
Where they're interrogating, especially the young man, to like 3 or 4 in the morning. And so what happens is like Shannon was saying, in the first episode, he's this fun dad. He's this one that everybody's like, oh, no, man, you got to give him a chance. He's really cool. And we're learning all this stuff from him, like a cult leader. OK, we get to episode 2 and he's starting to plant this seed that all of them have been conspiring against him and that they need to apologize for destroying his property, for doing all these things. Everything that he has set up for them to do, which we don't even really know if the property was set up. I mean, destroyed. What we do know is he set up an environment for them to fight and for him to remain on top. So now he starts interrogating and you start to see them because like we were saying, they video everything. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do this. You know, he has no idea what he's talking about. He hasn't done any of these things. He starts to have to pay money to Larry. And then they start to talk about how this becomes the fear, the humility, they're exhausted, they're starving. He puts them on strict deprivation. So he goes from giving them overindulgence, meds, exercise, food, sex, whatever, and now deprivation.
Takes it away. And he also starts to extort money from the parents.
Yes. Oh God, those poor parents, Leticia's parents.
And then he will
Felicia's parents.
He will take the women on these extravagant vacations. It's not that it goes all from great to all bad. It goes from great and friendly and cool to a lot of abuse and a lot of breaking down and a lot of interrogation and manipulative tactics at home. And then like taking one of the women to a extremely fancy hotel and buying her things. And so you're getting that intermittent reinforcement of you're the most special thing in the world. And that's, of course, what we always see with narcissism is that when their sights are on you, when they're paying attention to you, you're like the most interesting you've ever felt. You're the most sexy. You're the most beautiful. You're the most interesting. You're this the most captivating creature when you are in the mirror. And then when you're not, it's like you've been abandoned and you're trying to get that person's attention. And I can just imagine them in that home, in that apartment where they're living. And he's, you know, got this disparate attention to all of them and each one of them attempting to get his love and care to get back into the light. And I just, there's these scenes that, so one of the most interesting things about this documentary is that they've captured so much of it on audio and film, right? So you have these real life moments where, you know, one of the young women is having this massive breakdown and he's cradling her and comforting her. And she, and I can just see that she is obviously in a ton of distress and it's genuine, but I also know there's this part where it's possible. A lot of times this happens in the dynamic where they're amping that up to get his chaotic attention. They're amping up their own chaos to get that care from him because the rest of it is so depriving and so awful. So I'm not saying that she's manipulating him back in that sense. I'm just saying that that happens where you become so desperate to get that attention and that love and that caring because it's so rare and it's so few and far between that you realize if you're crazy, he'll care for you. And so you stay crazy. And I just saw a lot of that.
No, you're right. Because this was the reason why Felicia, I think also, he kept her in almost like a half conscious state. Mm-hmm. At some point how would I describe this? She was
like a fugue of some kind.
Yeah.
Dissociative.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that was really hard to watch.
It was. And then, so this third episode is pretty interesting because it's afterwards, right? So mm-hmm. The guy goes away, goes to jail or whatever the heck. And we are interviewing these women that had been in his care, so to speak, lived with him and been a part of his cult.
Mm-hmm.
And the male had already gotten away. The brother had already gotten away, meaning he had moved out and had realized, he even says in the video, like, and then I realized I was actually in a cult. Like there was a moment when I realized like, oh, that's what happened. So he came out of his dissociation and realized what was happening. But then you cut to these women's interviews. And in the third episode, they show the trajectory of he's still my everything. I'll support him. I know he's in jail. I know he's not allowed to talk to us, but I'm not going to talk badly about him. He's still my every. They're still under all of his influence. And that is when I got serious Manson vibes.
For sure. And when she's talking about how she's married to him and they call each mm-hmm. other, their little pet names for each other.
You could see that she was still very elevated in mood. She was still very it's not manic. It's just, you could tell she was still very avoidant.
Like expansive or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to look at because she's very much still in the belief of, well, and in wanting to believe that it was real, because at this point it's all crumbling. Right. And so now it's like, I support him. He's my everything. We're going to be together. And the two women are living together and they're having this shared delusion of like, we're going to wait for him. We're going to be here. It's so hard to be without him. It's so hard for him not to be here. So there's all of that. And then slowly, and this is, I think, what's so heavy about this third episode, is that slowly you watch them change and shift.
Mm-hmm.
And they move out of that apartment. One, you know, they start to be accused of things and maybe convicted of things that happen in the apartment. And so they start to have this buzz of reality, like, oh shit. You know, I could go to jail if I don't turn on him, this kind of stuff. And but then you see them move out, so they're not influencing each other, which really helps. And then you see one of the women go back to her family and get connected and grounded to reality again,
mm-hmm.
which was really hard because Larry had convinced her that her family was evil,
mm-hmm.
and that they were the reason that she saw things. They were the reason why she didn't feel good. And she truly believed it. She was like nervous, literally still sitting outside the home going in to see them. And so you just slowly see the psyche come back online and have their realities like come crashing in on them, which I really got to give it to them, because when that happens, that can, if you don't have a strong enough like psyche and ego and support, that can crush. That can really crush you.
Absolutely. Because that's that jarring moment where you finally realize that everything has been a lie and how much.
And you look at yourself.
Yeah.
And I've never been through something as drastic as what they're talking about. I've never even come close to that. But I've certainly met people that have the capacity to manipulate. And so I can only imagine what they felt like. And in those moments, you know, I don't know what the true moments were like because this is a documentary, but you know, that's dark nights of the soul shit, man.
Oh, sure.
Because I imagine the days and nights were not good for these women afterwards. It's really heart-wrenching, but it does end in a good place.
Mm-hmm.
But you go on that journey with them, which I felt made this a good documentary, a unique documentary.
I did too, and I agree with you that you take this, I mean, I'm not trying to exploit, but you do take this ride.
You do.
Because you don't know, this very easily could have ended badly. And even though it's over, there will be this residual trauma, and then the other woman who, you know, they still have a lot of upset about. She ended up apologizing, I guess, but
yeah,
I can only imagine just all of the different rifts that happened, like you said, looking back at the choices that they made and then having to live with those. I mean, the years that will take to work through and helping them understand how that happens more often than people think. But, you know, at the same time, great, we can normalize it, but they're not going to get those years back.
No. And what they truly believed about themselves and the narrative that created is going to pop up. If just like any kind of trauma, we can always be at the grocery store and then something happens and you realize you're kind of having a trauma response and you're not exactly sure why. And I have a feeling that, you know, those kinds of things are going to happen quite a bit because they spent years of a very young life working in this situation. And you're right, the other woman, you don't really see her much, and she kind of says, well, if I don't turn on him, I'm gonna go to prison, they're saying. And that's because of all of the grooming that she ended up helping with and all of that, I believe. And then you kind of don't see her again because she declines to communicate with the woman again, and that because the lawyers say she shouldn't and mm-hmm. all this. And then she ends up pleading. And I think for money stuff, I don't even remember. It didn't even matter to me, but she ends up pleading and apologizing. And so her story ends with us as an audience not knowing if she just pleaded because she needed to get herself out of going to prison or if she had any kind of shift, because she could actually still be under his influence
right
at the end of this. So
right.
That was really.
And they were even saying too, the friends that were hanging out with them were saying like, we hope that they don't have a relationship with Larry anymore, but you
don't know.
It's hard to know.
Yeah. So it's the brother and the sister that were the ones that ended up realizing what had happened to them and then having a healing process and being with their family. So you definitely follow that story. Anyway, I think we would both recommend it, but you do have to be in the mood for something that is difficult.
It is hard.
Especially if you've had any kind of experience with cults or this kind of situation or gaslighting is not the word. That's part of what he's doing. But this is a very intense, very strong, you know, it never rose to the Jim Jones Manson vibes because there were no murders, but he could have very well gone that direction.
For sure.
Yeah. Very intense.
Yeah. If it would have gone on longer and he would have had more followers.
Yeah. If he had expanded that situation, it would have gone in that direction. If he had any kind of the narcissism, the grandiosity of world domination that Manson and Jones had, those big ideas, that's really the big difference here, is that he does not seem to have had that. So.
Sure.
But anyway, we recommend it, even though it's fucking sad.
So it is.
Thanks for coming. This has been an episode of Terror Talk. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Kathy. Sleep safe, everyone.